All right, we're going to go back into session. I believe, I'll wait till Nate comes back. I believe we have to say something about closed session. Is that correct?
He will when he gets back, so let's proceed.
He's coming right in. I'll let him do it when he gets in here. All right, we're going to go back into session. Item number six, and it's an information item to discuss the draft policy statements to be included in the 2018 triennial review adopting resolution. And this will lead to Nate.
Well, good afternoon, Chairman Noren. It's kind of funny, I was thinking of Brian as I sat here, and members of the board. Good afternoon. So as you said, our item today is an information item, and I'm going to give a very short presentation just to sort of set the stage for your conversation about the policy statements that were included in the draft resolution that we brought to workshop in May related to the 2018 training review. My name is Alita Mangelsdorf, I'm an environmental program manager of your staff, and I lead our planning and watershed stewardship division. So as I say, the main purpose of my presentation today is just simply to facilitate your conversation on these policy statements. During our May workshop, it came up that there was an interest of the board to provide some guidance and input and have an opportunity to put these policy statements into your own words in preparation for the final resolution, which will come before you in September for your consideration. What we will do following my presentation, myself and some members of our staff will be taking notes. We'll have the recording of the conversation available to us, and we'll use that information to update the draft policy statements so that they reflect the content of your conversation. My presentation is to cover these basic elements. I want to cover, as just a sort of educational item, the policy-making tools that are generally available to the board, offer some examples of policy statements this board has already adopted, just do a brief overview of the draft policy statements that we brought to you during the main workshop on the training review, review the questions that we posed to you for your consideration and preparation for this meeting, and then review some preliminary input that we received as a result of those questions. And then I'll be turning it over to you. David Noren will be facilitating the conversation that you have on the key topics. So related to policy-making tools, the state and regional water boards develop regulatory and non-regulatory tools through the Port of Cologne and the Clean Water Act. We generally have available to us the development of water quality control policies, water quality control plans, and policy statements. It's the state board that generally develops water quality control policies. This is authorized under section 13140 of the Water Code. And those water quality control policies are a regulation. They provide rules of general applicability. And generally what happens when the state board adopts a water quality control policy is that we then will adopt it, at least by reference, into our basin plan, and that's how we go about the business of implementing it. On the other hand, the State Board also has the authority under Port of Cologne under Section 13170 to develop water quality control plans, which we know as a basin plan, which is how we call our general regulatory plan. And so for statewide purposes, the State Board can also adopts and amends from time to time a basic plan. Again, this water quality control plan houses the regulations, their rules of general applicability, and their standalone plans. We don't need to adopt them by reference into our basic plan for them to have full effect. We implement them, for example, the pollution plan, which the state board adopts. We implement them as their own standalone plan. And in fact, if there are any portions of the state basin plan or water quality control plan that is in conflict with a regional board, similar regional board provision, well then the statewide plan prevails. Available to the regional board then are, is the ability to develop a water quality control plan or a basin plan. And as you know, we have a plan that was first written in 1972 and has been amended many, many times since then. The basin plan houses our regulations, again, rules of general applicability. Most of the provisions need to be incorporated into a permit for them to be enforceable, but there is one exception, and those are any of the prohibitions contained in the basin plan. Prohibitions are essentially self-enforceable. But the second tool that the regional board has available to it is described in Article 1, Section 15.224, is the development of a policy statement. A policy statement is non-regulatory. It has no regulatory effect, it's not enforceable, but it's an opportunity for the board to make an opinion, to state an opinion, to offer some encouragement to dischargers or to partners or to general stakeholders on the water quality issues. And it's also an opportunity for the board to give a specific direction to staff on those key issues. And this is a tool that this board has made use of to excellent effect on a number of occasions. And here are two examples that I'll remind you all of. One was the adoption of the sediment TMDL implementation policy statement. This was adopted by resolution R1 2004-0087. And basically what the board said in that policy statement was that the staff was directed to develop a work plan to control excess sediment in sediment-impaired waters. And staff was directed to use the existing permitting and enforcement tools to attain sediment-related standards. We used a similar approach in the development of the temperature implementation policy. So we brought first to you a temperature implementation policy statement, which you adopted as resolution R1-2012-0013. And in that policy statement, basically the direction to staff was to develop an implementation policy as a basin plan amendment. And there were some key statements of opinion that we should be promoting riparian trade and other stream temperature protections. And the board also directed staff to develop and implement a region-wide water temperature trend monitoring. In both of these examples, there was a second step, and that is that at a later point, these policy statements were brought before the board again and actually adopted into the basin plan as an amendment. So they were essentially transformed from a policy statement with no regulatory effect into our basin plan where it has regulatory effect. That's not the process that we're suggesting here today with respect to the topics that we'll talk about in a minute. But I just wanted to acknowledge that those particular examples were a fuller example of policymaking than what we're suggesting here. So the draft policy statements we brought to you in May are embedded in what will be the adopting resolution for the 2018 triennial review. And there are four topics that we've included as key water quality issues. And those are climate change, water conservation, contaminants of emerging concern, and groundwater protection. And we were inspired to include these particular topics for a number of reasons. With climate change, the State Board has recently adopted its own resolution on climate change, and in its resolution has encouraged regional boards to do the same. With respect to water conservation, the governor issued a directive on water conservation. This was a good foundation for developing our own statements related to water conservation and our commitment to that activity in this region. Similarly, contaminants of emerging concern have been addressed by a Blue Ribbon panel put together by the State Water Board, and they've issued some statements which were a good foundation for the statements we've suggested in the draft policy statements. And then groundwater protection is a topic that's come before you many, many times. We're working on a groundwater protection strategy. We make general a general observation that the North Coast region has high quality groundwater and that we make a lot of domestic and municipal use of that groundwater for drinking water and other purposes. And so this was an opportunity to offer you an ability to make a statement about the importance of groundwater. So we asked some questions of you related to these policy statements, again, based on the fact that there was interest of this board at the May workshop in participating a little bit more in a more hands-on way in developing these policy statements. And so the questions we asked were, are there any issues that you'd like to remove from the list that we included in the draft resolution? Are there any issues you would like to add to the list? And then in terms of the statements themselves, are there any new or revised results that you'd like to include? And are there any new or different documents or foundational information directives that you'd like us to turn to as the basis for any new language? We received some preliminary input, and so I'll just kind of run through them. No one suggested that any of the topics be eliminated. But there was a suggestion of a new topic to consider, and that is road-related water quality impacts. And so that, I hope, will be part of your conversations in a moment, the degree to which this is a topic you'd like to develop a policy statement on. And then I've divided the remaining the preliminary input into two categories, and the line between these two categories is a little bit fuzzy. So it hardly matters, but I'll just say I divided them into those that input that would suggest a revision to the approach that we drafted, that we saw in May, and then the second group, which are really just about clarifying the language, so offering language choices that help to clarify the intent. So let's just run through this so it's clear in front of you what already has been brought to the table in terms of potential changes, and this can be part of your conversation. There was a suggestion that we add the phrase improving groundwater recharge and stream flows as one of the key goals of the board when it takes actions to enhance ecosystem resilience to climate change. Maybe that's self-explanatory. The next suggestion was that in addition to sea level rise projections, which the state board has encouraged the regional board to rely on when it does work in along the coast, there was a suggestion that in the North Coast region, we actually have a number of other sources of climate-related projections that we should be able to rely on. And in particular, we were pointed to Pepperwood's Terrestrial Biodiversity Climate Change Collaborative as a resource for those local projections that we should rely on. There was a suggestion to broaden the topic of water conservation, so not just focus on water conservation specifically, but think of it as a tool to address the larger question of the effects of drought and flow concerns, and also to think of other tools like rainwater catchment, surface water storage and forbearance, and groundwater recharge as additional viable tools. There was a suggestion that on the topic of CECs, that there isn't enough, perhaps, clear science relating CECs to recycled water use, and so that we should be clear that we are indeed committed to understanding better the effects of CECs and where they come from, but also just be clear that science is in development. There was a suggestion that it be an explicit policy of the board that as a matter of practice and every opportunity we have that we promote water conservation in each of our programs. Suggestion that we clarify that groundwater resources are equally important to the board as surface water resources. And there was a suggestion to direct staff specifically to engage in strategic planning, which improves our readiness to manage impacts from future wildland fires, like the one that we had last fall. So these are the things that I categorized as essentially offering clarifying language. And as I say, the distinction is not important. But basically, there was a suggestion that we make more clear that water quality benefits can be derived from the efforts to reduce methane emissions at dairies. It was, it's been encouraged by the State Board that we engage with the Air Resources Board in helping to design programs to reduce methane emissions at dairies. And the suggestion here is that we just be more clear that there are also water quality benefits to be derived from that activity. At the same time, we received input that the kinds of dairies that we have on the North Coast, for the most part, are small, and that our opportunity to reduce methane emissions on North Coast dairies may be limited. There was a suggestion to expand on our commitment to continue participation in CEC research, essentially be more explicit that we are we want to be actively engaged in CEC research. A suggestion to add household chemicals and animal husbandry products to the list of CEC substances that we are concerned about. Suggestion that we clarify that with respect to drought and flow, that we are a region with Mediterranean climate in much, especially our southern portion of the region, and we naturally experience summer drought and low flow conditions. So that's the sort of natural background that we work within. And then there was a suggestion that in the statement on CECs that we remove mention of bioanalytical tools as a future technique that is under development that we'd like to turn to when it's ready, and instead use a more general term that just relates to any future new tools that are developed that we'd want to bring into our program. So again, the purpose here is really just to facilitate your own conversation about these and other issues associated with policy statements. We have a team ready to take notes, and I think what I'll do now is turn it over to you, Mr. Noren. And I have some slides here that just have headings on them to kind of help lead you through each of the topics that are ripe for conversation.
Great. Well, first, Alita, thank you. Right, that these were introduced as from staff originally into the proposed adopting document for the triennial review. Right, okay. There was mention, especially Kelly, you brought this up, that to put it in our own words. And in fact, this is now moved to further than that, into eliminate, enhance, or potentially add to these. Right. I think the intent here today, as I understand it, is not necessarily to take input from the public. If this is really a board discussion and we do this in the open, that we have a conversation about what's important to us. To me, this is about regulatory philosophy and potential direction. The triennial review process is a process that we update what we are working on behind us and things that weren't accomplished because maybe they're more long-term. They're also to introduce new things that are priority as they come. As it is then, we have some language that has been included and proposed by staff. Of course, I'll speak for myself. I didn't provide, in the time between when we started this to now, I have not provided you written suggestions myself. My intention is to do so. But the intention today is just to have a conversation. It's not to scribe this out or to wordsmith it. It's not to write it down and get it up on the screen so we get it perfect. It's really to flush out ideas and to provide a forum which we can decide at least or discuss individually and collectively what's important to us as an agency as we implement the authority that we have and maybe reach beyond that in ways that as we can, right? As a bump regard to this, my suggestion is, you know, topics to eliminate. I don't see an elimination process here. I see that there's a process that there's been some comments to maybe change or to modify some of the language. I think that's appropriate. I'd encourage that if board members in after today and up to today, and including what we've done to date, if you individually have suggestions, this is not a closed process after today, as I understand it, so then that we could continue to add to modify additional topics here. I think it's interesting that these topics, in large part, like water conservation, is not something that we have explicit authority over, nor do we have explicit authority over climate change. It's not explicit in Port of Cologne. In some ways, that doesn't handicap us in that it's not that we don't have authority. This is not necessarily to enhance our authority. I think it's more to provide direction about how we use the existing authority we have as things change, develop, or amend. Climate change is a perfect example of that. We're now implementing climate change really through resiliency, permit review, infrastructure, that type of thing. I think it's come into our conversational lexicon in a big way over the last couple of years, and I think it's super important that way. My suggestion is we just have a conversation. We have an open and free conversation as people are comfortable. We could take these, as we have now, the existing language that we have here in front of us by topic, and then we could talk about additions too if we want to have additions. Again, if we could go back to eliminations if we want. I got to admit, when I went back and read this agenda item, I read them again, the proposed language, and I was like, wow, these are pretty good, right? I don't disagree with really much of it, right, or really any of it. As it is, some of these have been certainly addressed through the State Board, the Governor's Office. Some of this language, I believe, came out of that. I appreciate the work that went into it, the thought, and I didn't necessarily disagree myself with it. So with that, I would suggest that we look at these kind of individually. So topics to add, there's a proposal to include road impacts. And we just went through the 5C road discussion. There was an email that Matt, you put out about that there was a workshop, I think, in Mendocino that some staff went to. And that the comment that I saw back from a board member was, yeah, that's a perfect opportunity to go and carry that out there to the public, that roads are important, that, you know, the 5C road program is a viable program that really can be used, and that's the right forum to go promote that. And I think that's absolutely right. I'm interested in the roads. So if we flush this out a bit with respect to roads, you spelled out the road part of this, right?
We can start on any topic you'd like. I put them in this order, and so if this is a good place to start, that's great.
Yep, go for it. And by the way, let's start there. Questions or comments about how you want to do this? Because this isn't my thing. I mean, this is our thing. So let's talk about how you want to go.
So this documentation is the document. It says adaption of FY 2018. Carter, you review this one?
That's the adopting resolution.
Right. So that's where the statements are.
That's correct.
So those statements, I'm assuming, start on page 3. Right, or it says policy statements.
I believe that's true. Yep.
So I saw the policy statements more like mission statements type of thing. So these that we have in here is a lot of background. And
correct. The other part of it, as a point of clarification, is it in the resolution, therefore being resolved?
Mm-hmm.
That's where the real statements are.
So one thing that I find that the public and anybody gets a problem is we write documents that are really, really big.
Sure.
And it takes forever to get down to what you really mean. I think all of this stuff, prior to the rationale and all of this stuff, the 12 on them, he just nicks.
To take it out?
Yes. I don't think we need to justify. I mean, we go into all this history and all the resolutions and what the governor's passed and... We come up and say, in our triennial review, these are our policy statements, similar to what is on the one that one slide, the draft policy statements. I think you can put the back up in an appendix if you want, but when people go to read a document like a new employee or something, it needs to be crystal clear and easy for people to find what our policy statements are. And how we got there isn't important to the document. They go back in the minutes and read all that. So I would eliminate all of that until we get to just, these are the three bullet points.
The beat of the matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
appreciate that. I personally don't see any downsides to including the language from how we got there myself. I don't see a downside to saying, listen, climate change, especially as an example that Port of Colum does not give us explicit authority on climate change. That we are not explicitly regulating the changing climate. What we're doing is using Port of Colum and our regulatory tools to then craft permitting a regulatory policy process that incorporates the climate change topic and issue into permits and decisions. For instance, a wastewater treatment plant upgrade. We talked about it with the Eureka. The Eureka wastewater treatment plant is basically on Humboldt Bay on the south end. They're going to go through a plant upgrade. It's a perfect example where I think we would want that kind of consideration of how they build that infrastructure that's going to be there for a long, long time. It's critical infrastructure to the community, and it has a high degree of, it has to be highly dependable through a range of conditions.
So would that be simply a statement such as include a review of climate change impact in all orders? I mean, that's a very simple sentence.
Yes.
I think what you're doing is boxing it into a mission statement format. Mm-hmm. I think personally, the background information is important mm-hmm. as a prefix,
yep.
because that's where you came from, and you're looking into the future with these statements, with these policy statements.
Yes, then I would change the heading then, so this isn't our policy statement.
Okay, fair enough.
Say this is regulatory background, or okay. I don't know.
Whether we say policy statement or not, legally will have the same effect as a policy statement. So from the legal perspective, that means we can change it on a single meeting. You don't have to. So I don't care what we call it. I just want everyone to know, though, it doesn't lose its policy statement.
No, this is
just because that's really a procedure.
It's the name of just the section, title.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's
and
fair.
Then clarify under this resolve that those are actually
the policy statements are as follows.
Yeah, and they're more like guidelines, right? Our philosophical guidelines of how we operate.
Well, I think as Alita said, they don't necessarily themselves singularly have regulatory force, right? They're not a regulatory they're not regulatory language per se. I think they're more philosophy, I think the direction, and I think it gives an idea. Again, remember this is in a triennial review, so this is a 3-year look about what we're doing mm-hmm. as an agency. Certainly, again, take the longer view of what are we trying to say here. In doing the work that we're doing and giving direction, especially to staff, I think the more that we could clarify to staff what we're looking for. Because I think it would be extremely awkward to get through a 3-year period and go back and go, well, you didn't do any of this stuff, right? If we were clear about it. Now, that's not the case at all. But the thing is that in reality, I think the power of this board to me has always been that we have a very good and strong working relationship as staff with the working with stakeholders and working with the regulated community. And I think it strengthens us to be concise that way. So with respect then, I'm fine with formatting. If we want to talk about formatting, I think that's perfectly fine.
It was just confusing to me when I read it. Well, these aren't our policies.
Yep.
So that's just history.
Yep, I agree.
And then, so I was thinking more like the one slide that we have here, the draft statements for the 2018.
Yeah.
I think it's a good starting point. Right there.
Right.
Take that and flush that out.
Okay.
That's what I was thinking, then add the topics.
Well,
type of thing.
And these actually, let me see here, hold on.
But it would be more of an action item. So climate change would be something like include analysis of climate change impact, blah, 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 blah. So it would be more like action items, I would think, would be the policy statements, or include an analysis of climate change and all, something like that, I was thinking.
Yeah, right now how it is a statement as of opinion on the issues to climate change, a regional board direct staff to support development, implement air resource board, short-lived pollutant reduction strategy, identify opportunities to reduce methane from dairies, update permits and policies, enhance ecosystem resilience, work with California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, federal land management, other relevant agencies to maintain healthy watersheds, reduce vulnerability to catastrophic fires, and work with the Department of Water Quality to assess opportunities to reduce methane emissions from landfills. And then there's two more here, actually. Provide information on annual performance report on regional water board activities to reduce methane emissions and refer to projections to sea level rise as directed in the Ocean Protection Council guidance document, the most current data available through CalADAP and the California Coastal Commission Sea Level Rise Policy Guidance. So to using these other, to use these scientific-based and peer-reviewed documents and other regulatory agency documents when our staff is making decisions based on climate change. That seems to me to be fairly comprehensive. Like, that's where I said when I went back and read this, I was like, well, those are good.
I would add another modification where you reference fire. I would say any catastrophic event. So that'll include a tsunami if it ever happens, an earthquake, fire.
Okay, fair enough. Did you have one?
I just had one generic comment, real close to the comments there, and that is we've been spoiled. We've had a governor who writes emergency decrees for 16 years, and they're amazingly sophisticated, and people I see new in agencies, except they'll misread them all the time. They'll say, this agency, I want you to do this, and they won't include another agency. So a lot of times he includes water quality with that subtlety, and people don't get it. But my overall point is we need to have our catastrophe procedures as well thought out as we can, because we're going to have a new governor, and maybe they'll copy the old one, but he's remarkably sophisticated on his emergency decrees. And it's lifted, I mean, it makes it easy for us, but it may not be so easy with a new governor. That's just a thought.
So, John, with that thought, then, would you change or modify, add to, or reduce the policy statements as they are related to climate change?
More, it, I think, affects implementation of those policies than the actual wording here. But I want to give a context that... we need to, if we have fire, we have under, you either have a general emergency approach, which we've not taken, or you have a specific, but it needs to make sure we do our homework ahead of time, because we don't have we may or may not have a heavy lifter out of the governor's office like we have now. So
let me clarify that question. Are you saying then, because it came up this morning about a fire event, right, that salvage logging we were talking about even this morning.
Right.
Right. I mean, that could be a climate-related issue that we develop or anticipate to modify forest permitting through national forests and perhaps even private to add salvage logging or to do something, modify salvage logging to anticipate more catastrophic wildfire events.
Right, and have adequate authority established up front, and because you also run into CEQA problems if you don't do that. So I just think we need to think it through and realize we've had very favorable petri dish coming from gubernatorial decrees. We got to treat that as an unknown. And it's not like they're going to try and get the job done, but they may not be. When Governor Brown includes something or doesn't include something, people always argue he forgot. No, he never forgets. He is very good at these things. That's all I can say.
Also, to dovetail with that is road maintenance and repair after the fact.
Yes, that is a critical...
On public and private and
state. That is one of the number one issues. You're right on the mark.
Well, and maybe we even expand that to include riparian and stream protection as it relates to emergency response, right? We certainly saw that
yes.
in the County Fire Complex, erosion control.
And then it also gets very tricky. Some of these canyons, the fires went up the riparian zones. You have a house there, you're not so favorable. We, of course, have good reasons for the riparian zone. So there's a whole host of issues that may come up when they're doing fire prevention that are a little different than we're used to, and we'll adjust, we'll do well, but...
So the thing is, if we frame this around climate change, so if we just take this one example with respect to catastrophic fires, we don't need to flesh out all the changes of permit that we would do in an upcoming permit. I think we could, right, we have in this next term, this three-year term, we're going to take on an update and renewal of the National Forest's general waiver, correct?
Yeah.
Does that include
2020?
That have the salvage logging or the emergency response provisions in it under one of the tiers? run up against with some of the fires in the Klamath National Forest, is that correct?
So as far as the U.S. Forest Service waiver, the opportunity to change requirements related to salvage logging would be during the next renewal of that permit, which I think is 2020. Under our private lands waiver for timber operations, it does address salvage logging, but we've talked for a while now the potential need to make some revisions to that.
Because of scale
size. And so that's
size.
Something that we can add to our work plan for this coming year.
Right, I think that's something coming up. It's a real opportunity for us to just fit it in this context.
Okay, so let's walk that back a minute. So if we want to just take that example then to say, we don't need all the pieces and parts spelled out here, but certainly we need a policy statement that we're directing staff in the update of permits or policies and regulatory documents, right, to include elements of response to catastrophic events. Right?
Yes, exactly.
With respect to protection of water quality, control of contaminants.
Say there's an earthquake and all these septic tanks blow. Or heaven forbid, Warren Springs dam fails. And you got paid.
No, really, I mean, that's the kind of thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, so to direct staff then in the update of permits to include an element of water quality protection elements that would be included with in response to natural
right, and disaster. I think a lot of that is we need to have the power to establish regional rates.
Okay.
And that would include private ownership.
That's not a policy statement, though.
Pardon?
That's not a policy statement.
I'm more and more talking implementation of this.
But it could be direction to staff, because that's the opportunity here,
that?
Too.
Sure. Language has to be developed. To create a resilient response.
Yeah.
With an eye towards protection of water quality and natural resource, right? Okay. It seems doable. Is there any other things on climate change that were either left out, overarching too much?
So in these climate change zone, are we going to like condense some of these to not be?
The idea today, I think, is just to get things out and to get, because we have scribes, we have a recording going. All we want to do is, I think, gather ideas, Kelly. So we don't need to necessarily, again, wordsmith. I think it's really about just having the conversation.
Just good overarching statements of fire.
Yeah, if we want to get to specifics, again, we kind of don't know the fires here for a minute, but we could do that.
Okay.
Were there elements, John, did you have something?
Yeah, I had under 17 resolution, blah, blah, encourages the regional boards to update plans. I think we need to add cold water refugia.
Where are you?
I'm on page 3, number 17, climate change.
This is the background
information? Yeah, this is the background.
But I'm using that to...
Okay.
We need to make sure we handle cold water refugia. We need to take into account water supply can affect water quality, and I'm hoping we have a very soft hand in doing that, but I think that's necessary to be there.
I think that was just what I suggested on the finding 17th principle on that slide.
So those are your words, Ms. You responded, you provided written things, so you got your homework in early, huh?
These are not all me, somebody else did.
There are a lot of smart people. The other thing is wetland restorations is going to be huge. And I will give Humboldt Bay for a couple examples. There was a proposal floated, it blew up. But they were proposing to take current tight ag lands, put fill on them, so that 20 years hence after the sea rose, that it would be at the sufficient depth for, I'll just use seagrass as opposed to pickleweed. That went down because it makes no sense to fill wetlands to save wetlands. But I do want to say that sets up some very interesting issues. And I also think for like the other one is they have in here, we're going to follow the state guidelines on the rise of oceans. I think that's great as a starting point. As I mentioned to our staff, I wanted us to be proactive on that, because if there are areas where those projections aren't working, we need to notify the state and hope that they'll make some changes based upon what's happening on the ground. And that's especially true in areas where there's subsidence that's occurring naturally before you have the seas rising. And so that's going to give you a little different number. And then I think the other thing is to make sure it's consistently applied in the same water bodies, because we have a lot of local governments that care a lot about this issue, and they all come up with a little different sea level rise. That's fine to some extent, but if you're building facilities or you're trying to make resiliency planning, you need to get a common set of numbers.
I thought I would offer, related to wetlands and wetland restoration, that in Region 2, and they're one of the ways in which they are addressing climate change in an area of San Francisco Bay where they're going to see tremendous impacts eventually, is to really focus at least initially on the development of habitat, so wetland habitat,
right,
as a protection, so natural infrastructure.
Right, and Arcata has an experiment on that, mm-hmm, in northern Humboldt Bay, which is less affected by sea level rise than southern Humboldt Bay for various reasons. Mm-hmm. But yes, that is a whole trend to be favorable for. Could be anywhere from writing letters for grants along those lines, but that's a very valuable tool.
So if there is something in that idea that appeals to you all, that might be a topic of conversation, whether there's a statement to be made about a preference for natural infrastructure as a first cut when thinking about sea level rise and other climate change impacts.
So you're talking about something like encourage natural habitat projects that mitigate the impact of climate change?
Perhaps.
I'd like to also propose that, with John, you mentioned flow, and I think flow comes in a couple of these headings. Certainly, we have made moves on flow in the last triennial review, right? That we, with the flow study on the Navarro River that's ongoing, that just is getting off the ground now. Certainly, the state board has encouraged us to at least said in the past that we have some authority on flow. Certainly, also the California Water Action Plan has prioritized some of our watersheds with respect to flow, high-quality flow. We've heard a lot of comments from some of the fishery folks about, you know, flows and high-quality flows, maintaining those flows, be proactive in our use of our tools, including enforcement. I think flow is important. I think we need a policy statement specific to flow, directing staff to continue. We have done some really interesting things related to flow, whether it be the gathering of scientific data that's been happening on, I understand some was recently done on the flooding temperature studies on the Eel River. I know that some was done up at the Trinity watershed. I think that as it relates to flow, then I think we need to have a policy statement related to direct staff to continue to collaborate and to work on flow. That's mostly come out of the Division of Water Rights, out of the State Water Board. The preservation of cold water flow and refugia, that comes into you, John. Certainly the cannabis order had a very unique and kind of creative way to try to get at water rights. I don't know how that's all going to be verified through the state board, because in essence it changed the way the water rights work from the 1914 model on up. Basically it's an enrollment, they have some requirements and forbearance and all that stuff. But I think my idea is to include a statement about flow, the preservation of flow, and the high quality flow of surface water that we have. It's important to most all of our beneficial uses, and it could get to the refugia part as well.
And some of the preliminary input we had suggested exactly that, but the way to accomplish that would be to essentially transform the water conservation policy statement to be a broader statement on flow, and water conservation is just one of the tools.
Yes, and I think it could be work that we're doing in-house now with staff like Brian McFadden or others. It could be work that's been done in collaboration with other agencies like California Fish and Wildlife, flow studies, Division of Water Rights, that type of thing, that we continue then to do supportive and high-quality work. I also know that directly we're funding, I believe, through a grant through the Navarro Flow Study. We've had at least some direction from the State Board that we do have some authority with flow, certainly not over water rights, but certainly flow is connected. Water quality and water quantity are directly linked. And to use all our tools to then maintain high quality flow within our region. And I can make that a homework assignment for myself to craft that up after. Hey, you're gonna get one too, man.
I just quit laughing.
Okay, any others with respect to climate change or water conservation?
During the briefing, didn't we talk about prioritization of use? So clean water out of ground. First use water was domestic, municipal. Secondary treated water was to be used on landscaping or encouraged use on landscaping. I guess as it refers to the statement would be recycle and as much as you can.
Yeah,
you could say encourage conjunctive use would be a good way to describe that situation of balancing fresh water, recycled water, conservation, groundwater, surface water.
Yeah, and certainly, by the way, Hector, the State Board has the recycled water policy. That's really where that lives. We could also refer to and encourage or direct staff to use and implement the recycled water policy as appropriate, right? That gives us some priority that mandates recycled water for sure, especially, you know, your end of the world, I know, is ag, and as it is out there, ag seems to be one of the bigger commodities and users of recycled water. I see that as a water conservation frontline issue because it's offsetting potable, either surface water, direct surface water, diversions, and or groundwater consumption. I think that's a perfectly appropriate thing to include. Any others with respect to water conservation? There was some language in here that were included, I don't know if it was you, Valerie, or whoever else got their homework in on time, was to include things like rainwater catchment, that type of thing.
That was me. I think that was what Alita was maybe alluding to in terms of expanding the water conservation section to be a little bit more about not just conservation, but other ways.
No, good job. I think that's exactly right. I think that's right. Okay. Let's move on to constituents' emergent concerns. Certainly, we had a board item, I believe it was 2 meetings ago, that we heard from some of the studies that were done in the Russian River system regarding CECs. CECs are still something that are a very big issue for a lot of people. Certainly, you could see some of those out there with respect to Russian River system. Specifically, State Board has had, I believe, 2 lures in panels at this point to try to get their arms around CECs here. The statements on CEC are generally fairly good to me. Special studies to understanding how CECs impact groundwater and surface water, I think that's important. Require monitoring for CECs with the findings, recommendations, and national and statewide studies, and new and revised permits. That seems appropriate to me. Coordinate with other statewide CECs efforts and existing tools for standardized and integrated data sharing. And ensure the maintenance of high quality waters and protection of beneficial uses. CEC shall be periodically monitored through the appropriate regional programs and permitting mechanisms and ambient water studies. So that would be, I assume, some of our swamp monitoring and some of our perhaps groundwater monitoring. Any others as that relates? Okay. Groundwater protection is the one that I think needs, is the place where I'm really wanting to have a discussion over here. I believe, and I've said publicly, that we are blessed with high quality groundwater in this region and a fairly abundant amount of it. I believe that our groundwater condition in this region is really, at least from a regulatory standpoint, is well-founded on all fronts, but especially on anti-degradation. I think the big thing that we need to do is protect against anti-degradation. We're lacking salt nutrient management plans because, frankly, they're big and expensive, and the expectation that solid nutrient plant management plans were going to be done in every basin here. It just has not worked out. From that standpoint, I know that there's some work in the Santa Rosa Plain because of the Santa Rosa regional system is recycling water in a big way. I know also Ukiah is moving to put in a lot of infrastructure right now, Purple Pipe, certainly Willits has their system out there, and I know that there's others. We just heard, you know, on the last board meeting, we had an agenda item on Sonoma West Holdings, which actually is a land application process. It indicated at least some degradation was happening. As a result, staff then recommended or required some groundwater monitoring that was enhanced, additional study step. I think that's perfectly appropriate. I think if there's one thing that we're going to be need to really be strong and protect on is groundwater. Groundwater is one of our biggest assets here. I think it's absolutely connected to our surface water flow here. And I think as we look at that, then how do we craft language, or what do we want to include as with respect? Can you remind me before we go any further? I know we're working on a groundwater protection strategy, but the policy is to follow that. Is that correct?
The policy is part of the strategy. The strategy, as it's described, is to do a number of things internally to coordinate better with the state board, to participate in the various groundwater basins where there are groups getting together to do the DWR groundwater use assessments, and also to look at, begin doing what analysis we can with existing groundwater data that comes through GeoTracker. But then the policy is also embedded in that strategy, and it includes all the same things that we've talked about, so a sort of programmatic approach to salt nutrient management, planning and protection, and defining some new groundwater beneficial uses, essentially designating some new groundwater beneficial uses, and describing some analytical techniques related to designated waste.
So remind me, in the triennial update, where are we at? Was that included in the triennial update?
Mm-hmm.
I don't
mm-hmm.
recall. Is there a timeline for when that were going to be done, Mr. Jeremiah? Yes. Is that in the next 3 years? Okay, good. I think that then remains a high priority for us, right? It's a high priority project. Now in the last couple of years, we've also got CASGEM in play, which is a lot about the prioritization of basins. I think that's absolutely linked to our groundwater quality issue. With respect to that, I think we also reiterate, I would imagine that policy would also include how then we use and establish water quality objectives. We went through the change in the basin plan 2 years ago about table 3132, I believe it was, because there's a great body of work, including Marshak and many others out here, about where water quality standards apply and how they're applied. I think as a policy statement, we would reiterate that, reiterate how that's done, or that we refer to the fact of what we did with that, and also then reiterate the importance of maintaining high quality groundwater in this region as it relates to all the beneficial uses attended to that.
So groundwater protection is going to be projects that
we groundwater recharge? Certainly we could include a statement. The statement that's here now has a statement of its opinion on the issue of groundwater protection. The Regional Water Board directs staff to require groundwater monitoring wherever discharges to land have reasonable potential to protect groundwater quality. And the results of such monitoring are necessary to support further assessment or action. That's a pretty broad and big statement, so it doesn't have some of the pieces and parts to it. I think certainly in my mind we can include some specific policy statements here about groundwater. I think it would be a good move for us to do so. I think it would set forth and support, you know, the work by staff. Jeremiah's a groundwater protection specialist. We have other folks in office, staff people that are a part of that here too. And that's a process that's ongoing. We can support that at the same time. Riddle me this. So when it comes to the strategy, do we have, I don't know when the next agenda item workshop or briefing on this is, so do we have things upcoming on this where we would know what's coming? It's a ways out, I believe, right?
Well, No, go ahead.
I mean, it's the hearing on the triennial review priority projects list.
Yes.
That would be the time that we can flesh out the status.
Okay.
The staff report does provide a pretty detailed written update on the status and what the scope of that groundwater protection strategy is. But at the hearing in September, we can provide some more information if the board would like that.
And again, Jeremiah, so the strategy as and the policy that comes with that then does have a groundwater recharge or enhancement component to it, I would imagine. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're looking at that.
Okay.
So the idea of a policy statement on groundwater began with the question, or began with the topic of the anti-degradation policy and high-quality groundwater.
Yeah.
And the question of how to support staff when developing draft permits that are designed to protect groundwater, how to support staff in those cases where they feel it's necessary to require monitoring to be able to determine whether or not groundwater is going to be impacted. And so that was sort of the key issue that we began with, and it came, I think, David, probably in conversations with you and your feelings about anti-degradation and the need to protect our high-quality groundwater. So I think the issue that oftentimes comes before you on individual permits is then an argument about whether or not groundwater monitoring is reasonable.
That's correct.
And so by making a statement about the importance of groundwater, protection of groundwater, and those kind of conditions in which monitoring is really appropriate, sort of you support staff in
which
what
is
it
the
is
statement
they
number six in essence, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, we saw that at Humboldt Creamery with their permit a couple of years ago. We certainly saw it recently with some of our holdings. That's something we see. And you're right, we don't want to be in the scrumness. We're going to get that no matter what, right? There's a potential for that to always come. From the standpoint, though, of just the policy statements for ourselves, I believe that 6816 anti-deg gives us the legal footing to be strong on groundwater. You know, that it's very explicit about, and it's very short and concise about, it's like a page and a half, that, you know, if it's not fouled, you shall not foul it, and if you foul, you shall fix it, basically. And that's a very, very powerful and underlined statement to the entire basin plan section on what we're doing here. I think my mind is to reiterate that, to put that as a footing and to support and that protection and it's really a direction to staff. It's also a policy statement outward. As it relates then to the development of the strategy and policy for groundwater protection, we could get to that, as Matt said, in the September adopted resolution about, or actions about how we then prioritize that if we want to change it, enhance it, or whatever, right? Any others change it? Anything else on groundwater? I know that groundwater is a big deal for me, but is it something anybody else? No? Let's jump to roads. The roads statements. Can you bring back up roads, please?
Yeah. Could I just add one more thing on groundwater, because this came up from the other piece of input that we got besides Valerie's, which was a suggestion that there be a statement of the board that groundwater is equally important to this board as surface water. I think we focus a lot on surface water because we have a lot of Clean Water Act programs that we implement that are directed specifically at surface water and not groundwater, but that was a suggestion.
I think that's perfectly appropriate. I don't think the law allows us to be less regulatory about groundwater necessarily. Then oftentimes we see, I think, surface water from a point source discharge or even a non-point source, that groundwater is immediately apparent. A lot of times we see groundwater impacts that are kind of after the fact, right? They're more kind of chronic. They're something that we see from leaking septics or a leaking underground fuel tank or a landfill or something like that. Yeah, I think that's perfectly fine.
Okay.
Roads. So the road statement. Can I ask Alito what were the road related statements that remind me?
Well, maybe Ms. Quinto would like to.
Is that you?
Yeah, I suggested that just as a general topic and. Alita and I talked about it a little bit, but didn't get too far into fleshing it out because I was interested in hearing whether the board was interested in doing that before working too much on details of it. But I think the reason it came to mind was with the question about are there any other topics that should be covered. Lately, this has been coming up a lot. It's a huge issue in our region. We talk about it in all different ways, in all different contexts. And there's a lot of work already going on with regard to, you know, controlling sediment on roads. And I think, you know, for me, it's not just sediment, but it's also the hydrologic impacts to the watershed beyond sediment that roads can have, and interactions with stream flow and groundwater recharge and all those things. So my thought was that a statement could, you know, there could be the combination of kind of the background bullets that are in the, you know, starting on page 3, just kind of describing the issue and how important it is in our region, some of the complexities of that issue, the fact that, you know, roads are ubiquitous across many different landscapes and many different land uses, and in some cases, road-related water quality issues can be addressed through permits for those land uses, but because it's such a widespread issue, you would have to have a permit for every land use to be able to actually have permit terms for roads everywhere. So just kind of describing the challenge of that, and then talking about the existing tools that are in use, and then maybe a general policy statement about really directing staff to continue to use a, you know, combination of kind of the carrot and stick tools that are available when it comes to road-related water quality impacts. So that was what I was thinking, was something pretty general, but I just, you know, the holding it up next to these 4 other issues that we're, you know, stating that we find them very important by putting them in here. I thought that roads are an equally important issue, and I thought maybe it would be covered in the sediment implementation policy, but when I went in the basin plan and looked at that, it didn't, to me, it didn't speak directly enough to roads to merit not speaking about it here.
Thoughts on that? Does it seem appropriate? I think so too. I think, you know, whether it be, I think we have existing regulatory authority certainly under forestry practice. I think we have under cannabis, certainly for some of the work that's been done and assessment work on cannabis, certainly it's one of the assessment sources I think we're looking at. I assume we're looking at that. I know we are, right? That road and road crossing, creek crossing, illegal cut and fill, that type of thing. Certainly we have some authority and plan in play. 5C, as it relates to rural roads, right? It's not private roads. Anything we want to do on private roads here, you know? I don't think we can take 5C and make it apply to private roads. Certainly we talked about the application and using it towards ranch roads or say like a housing, what would you call it? Like a homeowner association maybe or something like that. Institutional type facilities or land. That might be appropriate. Roads are certainly one of the bigger sediment sources that we see in the North Coast region. And they're an important sediment source that we really don't have. You're right, we don't want to go out and write 10,000 road permits or violations out here, but how can we get it effectively in directing staff to use the tools they have or develop new ones? That seems appropriate. Any others that we want to add here that we want to include?
That was the only one that was offered in the preliminary input we received.
So on the triennial review, we put policy statements into like how we want all the orders and the projects done. Like we want things done in a collaborative method, kind of like how our dairy project is run. So we'd be able to put management philosophy in there in a triennial review.
I don't believe that there's something that would prevent us from doing not to direct staff to work collaboratively. I think we do that anyway, but we can certainly make a statement out of it.
Yeah, I didn't know if that fell into it, our philosophy of how staff works with customers.
Yeah, I don't want to say we could do anything we want, but I think we could do that.
I don't know. Just an idea that came up.
Good.
So no, I think the thing I hear all the time is how people think how great the dairy program is, because it just kind of came up with a solution. We worked together and came up with a solution. It would be nice if all of our stuff ran that way. It's kind of hard when we get to
it. It is. I think that this agency, though, has a very good reputation for working and being collaboratively, and I think that's part of the power of the regulatory that we do from the standpoint that we do have the ability, and we're going to hear about enforcement with Diana in a minute, and that I believe that we do have both sides of that. We have the authority under enforcement, but we, more importantly, I think, have the fault. We have it from a management standpoint, and I think we have it from a board standpoint, staff standpoint, to be collaborative. I think we're really well known for that. I think to affirm that is absolutely appropriate.
Yeah, I think to market that strength that we have and let everyone know that's the way we run it would be very important.
Well, I got to say, I was very pleased in Siskiyou County meeting to be told that we're the good guys by some of the folks up there. I mean, that by the way, is... Bob Anderson, you're here. We have some rodeos up in that area. That's just because sometimes the way it is. But it's very gratifying to hear that, you know, to have somebody tell you that that staff out here, and it's kudos to staff, it's kudos to management, about how we're approaching this thing, I think. And I think it really does pay dividends and validates the core regulatory missions for which we approach these issues.
So I was going to suggest that maybe you want to review the mission statement that staff came up with a few years ago, and use it perhaps as a launching for a policy statement. It talks about healthy watersheds, good partnerships, and
effective regulation.
Yeah, it does really come back to that, and maybe that's mm-hmm. the place to actually put it under
put that
there,
and then all our state policy statements. I mean.
Yeah, or maybe put some sub-statements to that,
sure.
Right? That we encourage staff to continue down this court or to use those types of collaborative tools, but don't be afraid to bring the heat if you have to, mm-hmm. to use the tools that we have, which would be the entire toolbox.
I would go so far as even saying, like, remain the leader in collaborative whatever. Maybe there's something for the best region.
Right on.
Why not?
Right on.
That's why we're number one.
I think this is good. I think I think we've got a bit of work to do, but to think about this, to let it germinate. Certainly, there's note taking here, and there certainly were being recorded. Is there anything else that anybody would like to add to this at all? To either a statement, a philosophy, an overarching view that we think would be we could add to. Again, this is a 3-year up on what we're having staff go forth and do. But it's also a look out and a look in to ourselves and how we as an agency work.
So moving forward between now and the next meeting, would staff send out to us the drafts and I can't communicate between us, do we send notes and comments back to staff and they just kind of have something ready?
Like get your pigeon to fly over to my house? Yeah. And do it that way. No. The way that I understand it is that we're sent this. We have a range of ideas and discussion today, and that I would expect, Alita, that in this or out of this would come a synthesis of some of these. If I expressed an issue on groundwater, I would expect that Alita could come back to me and say, hey, you know, can you help me craft this? I've kind of got your idea condensed, but you were all over the road like you always are. And so let's just kind of get this straight about what you're talking about. I think that would be really appropriate. I think some of these, like Grandma came from me, some of the other things, Rose came from Browie, John Buttocks, and Women's Climate Change. Patrick, you brought up some great ideas. Greg certainly, I'm sure, would have some input into this. So I think maybe a synthesis of this as it is now. Mm-hmm. We're not under ex parte, I don't believe, but maybe they should weigh in on that. As it is, I don't believe we're precluded from having conversation and use you as the portal to have that conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
That seems appropriate.
Yeah, so that was our thinking, was that we would take the recording of this meeting and our notes and come back with a revised version, and I take your point, David, that could be to the best effect if we work with individual ones of you at specific suggestions.
Yeah.
And then we'll have a new draft for you to.
And by the way, I would ask too, you know, is there anything that you, I guess I know this is a board discussion at this point, but I would just open this outward a little bit, you know, just ourselves, because not necessarily make it a public discussion, but I believe that's the spirit of what you're looking for. Is there anything else that we didn't provide to you here that you know, is missed?
I've got lots of good suggestions, so thank you. No, I'm quite satisfied.
I'm satisfied, too. It's been helpful. I wanted to make one just kind of clarification so we're all on the same page. If there is continued input from an individual board member, but that would be done through me and be done kind of one way. And just to be clear, that with them won't be then shared with the rest of the board until we have a proposed resolution that we're bringing back towards to you. Any additional feedback that we get after this open session discussion would be on a one-on-one basis.
Yeah, that seems perfectly appropriate. And so make you the portal then.
You're the portal.
Well, my main point in that comment was that it's not between Davis and back to Kelly.
Don't send your pigeon to my house. Okay. Is that good?
That's good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for just putting us out here to make us go through the exercise.
Good.
You need a break? All right, we'll do a 5-minute break. We'll be back here at 3:30 to take on Jen's course.
I
didn't.
Oh,